This is Guardian Radio, your station for up-to-the-minute news, intelligent, interactive, and engaging conversation. 96.9 FM. The views and opinions of the hosts and guests are their own and do not necessarily reflect the position of the management and staff of Guardian Network.
Good morning and welcome to Guardian Radio AM. Today is Wednesday, September 28th, and it's a little after 11 o'clock in the morning. Once again, this is C.A. Nuri and I shall be your host for the day as we have a discussion over the seemingly proliferation of killer sharks attacking beach bathers on the beach. Well, seriously speaking, the term killer sharks may definitely be a misnomer, right? As sharks do what sharks tend to do, you know? But recently, there have been some fishermen who have been making some overtures that perhaps there are too many sharks in our waters due to the government banning the fishing of all the sharks, right? So today we're going to have a discussion. Today we're going to have a discussion with Paul Melis, who's a secretary of National Fisheries Association, right? Who's also a commercial fisherman. And we're going to put that question to him, right? Are there too many sharks in our waters? Is this ban against fishing for sharks making any sense? And to help me with this discussion, I have my guest host again, Catherine. And you know I could say Chisnell. I pronounced it right.
You pronounced it beautifully.
I pronounced it beautifully. And producer, I'm not sure if I can even hear Catherine, but she's coming on now. I can hear her mic. I hear her mic now. And so she's going to help me with this conversation as we poke at the brain of Paul, right? Being a de facto specialist on this conversation, right? So, Paul, there are killer sharks attacking a certain set of people, right, in the Bahamas. I'm not going to say who people, but the majority of the people who the sharks are attacking looks like you.
Wow, that's great, because when I was prepping for this show, I literally was asking one of my Packy boys from Super Value, and I said, do you have any interest in the fatal shark attacks happening in the Bahamas? He said, isn't that white people off a private island? Before we dive at Paul, one of the reasons that I said I think we need to talk about this, and CA said, why, who cares, is because I know so many grown people in the Bahamas that do have an ongoing fear of sharks. This is cemented by the fact that we've had a recent fatality that has made press, and who knows how many things that have happened that are off press, people might say, that are leading to the conversation of is there a growing population of sharks? Are there more sharks in our waters? Who's responsible for this? Because there was a blanket ban on not just commercial harvesting of sharks, but on all shark fishing that has now been given the Bahamas a sanctuary for shark reputation, and is something that the environmental groups are proud of and say that it's a good thing. But then we have incidences like this woman going under attack, and it's made news all over the world as what could be negative press. There's been news agencies like the BBC just did a big story on how there's towns in Brazil that have had to cut down on their shark tourism because of the proliferation of attacks on their tourists. Is that the kind of thing we're looking to face here? Is it a real danger towards the tourist market? Or is a real danger the fact that our fisheries are being hit by this influx of shark? Or is it even true? Are we just being fearmongers saying, oh my gosh, one thing happened, only 7 people a year are killed by sharks across the globe, we're overreacting, and none of this is actually fact-based? What are you seeing when you're out there in the waters, Paul?
Well, thank you so much, CA. Thank you, Catherine, for having me. Good morning, Bahamas. This is a very exciting topic for me. It's a very concerning topic for me and for many of the fishermen whom are represented by the National Fisheries Association and many of the other fisheries groups around the country. This is a hot topic. And what I hope to achieve today is to give you both and the public a very broad perspective, and then to give you some of the different perspectives from the various fishing factions, from the various environmental groups, and then my experience as a commercial fisherman. And then also my experience as both a graduate of science from Florida Institute of Technology, what I learned, and then also to put that all together into a sensible plan for our country moving forward. So let's start with first things first. The ban on sharks that took place, I believe it was back in the mid-2000s. This was a process that was not widely consulted, and there were individuals that were working on it that actually had worked very hard to ensure that, yes, we agree with the commercial ban of sharks because we don't want to start up a shark finning industry. We don't want to create interests that are going to commercially and eradicate the sharks from our waters, because everybody knows sharks play a critical role to the ecosystem, especially to the fishery. But they went too far. And this is the view held by most fishermen in this country. They went too far. They forbid even the artisanal capture of sharks and the cultural capture of sharks that was never commercial in this country. Sharks were never being commercially fished in the manner that the legislation banned. And so it was an extreme measure. And in fact, I'm quite privy to some of the individuals that helped to write the legislation, and they had made it sure that Bahamian citizens and Bahamian fishermen will always have the ability to take out problem sharks, sharks that have learned behavior, sharks that have learned to associate boats with food, who have learned to associate divers with food and have become immune to the fear of danger that a human being poses in the water. And so you're starting to see small Caribbean reef sharks become very bold in the way they approach a very large and what used to be a dangerous predator to them.
I'm so sorry, Paul, but can I just stop you here? Everyone who was listening that would, for this, from an environmental point of view, would say, what could be bad about the protection of sharks? It's scientifically proven that a healthy shark population protects our reefs. It's good for waters. That there's globally, there's a problem with decreasing populations of these super predators that are necessary for keeping our waters healthy. So what is bad about what that law being passed?
Let me put on my perspective of the conservation groups, okay? Because I speak to all these people, I know the perspectives. Well, let's talk about what is good about it, okay? Sharks are in danger in the international waters around the world. There's commercial longlining that is decimating the Oceania, the Pacific, the North Atlantic, South Atlantic, Mediterranean, you name it. Sharks are being decimated in those places. However, I think to bring it back to our country, the Commonwealth of the Bahamas, we have a very unique circumstance in this country, and we are not responsible for the entire planet shark population, okay? We are responsible for what we have implemented and what we manage. We have been very sensible in this country. We never developed a culture or allowed the culture of commercial shark fishing. We never allowed a certain indiscriminate massacre of sharks because we've never deemed it to be a commercial enterprise. And so when we look at what was before the ban and what is today, there is virtually no significant difference in the shark population other than it is growing beyond what was normal. So let me talk about a good thing that the shark ban did. I brought me some science here to this show today.
Because one of the things that people, a lot of the groups I've talked to, and there's so many groups that focus in on the shark populations of Bahamas, the Shedd Aquarium, the Perry Institute, the BNT, all of these people are scientifically interested in these numbers. So Is there enough evidence for you to be saying this, or are you just saying that when I go out there eating my mud and fish, we're not making money, it's affecting the fisher people of the Bahamas, who should all be listening because it's a ban on small crafts out there today, and we're praying for everyone being affected by Hurricane Ian, all our friends and family in Florida. But, I mean, is this science-based, or are you just saying I'm not getting the fish in my boat?
So as a commercial fisherman, I can speak from personal experience. Many of us in the Fisheries Association speak from personal experience. We've been attacked. We have been threatened. sometimes provoked, sometimes unprovoked. So we have decades of experience in the water, more than most of these scientists have ever spent in the water with sharks. And we've seen sharks at their best, and we've seen sharks at their worst, not when they're in a canned feeding environment where tourists, they're so used to seeing tourists, and they come year after year after year returning to the same spots, and they even associate some of these divers as their friends. You know, we're talking about people that are in the actual environment every single day, observing what they are observing and comparing it to what they historically knew to be true. Okay? And so let me ask you this question to those that say what fishermen observe is not scientific. If a scientist goes and amalgamates the opinions and observations of fishermen and publishes as a research paper, is that now science?
Definitely. So, before you go, Catherine, you mentioned problem sharks, right? And I want you to explain what is a problem shark again, and what is the danger for that? And should we be concerned in regards to, okay, we have definitely a problem shark here coming into our waters, or especially in the shallow end, beachhead?
Okay, so this is a great opportunity for education for everybody. Everybody that is interested in this topic. There are not just sharks, okay? There are a myriad of species of sharks, and there are dozens of species of sharks in this country, and not all of them occupy the same ecological role, not all of them are the same size, not all of them pose the same threat to humans, and not all of them are a problem to the fishing industry. And so you talk about the problem shark. Let's talk about the big boys. We don't have great whites in this country as a permanent resident, so we don't have to worry about them. They're the number one cause of death with shark attacks in the world. Then you have the tiger shark, which is the second largest killer of humans in the world. And they're also the largest tropical reef shark, though they inhabit the deep ocean, and though they can be found in perhaps the widest range of habitat. And then we have the bull shark, which is the type of shark that can actually live in fresh water and inhabits estuaries and swims up rivers like the Zambezi and actually attacks and eats people. And then you have the oceanic white tip. That is a large pelagic species. That means that it lives in the deep, deep ocean. And they have a high death count because they used to prey on those folks that actually were victims of shipwrecks. Anyway, there's so many more. The nurse shark, the Caribbean reef shark, the black tip shark. All these sharks have a different role, and they need to be managed accordingly to their function. And so whilst I am personally most afraid of a tiger shark when I'm spearfishing or a bull shark, I actually know that tiger sharks are probably the least likely to attack me because of their natural characteristics as an ambush predator, okay? But I'm actually more concerned with being rushed and attacked by a small Caribbean reef shark, and they actually are the ones that are eating most of the fish on the reef. They're actually the ones that are becoming learned and actually attack fishermen while they're spearfishing, or eat the baby groupers as you throw them off the boat when you're trying to release the undersize into the water. So there's different levels of problems. You have the threat to human life, you have the threat to the fishery, you have the threat to the tourism industry, and there's different sharks that occupy those different threats. And I think that what has the disservice to sharks that is being done by the preservationists is that they blanket all sharks into one category and say, we must protect that.
You know, and actually I was talking to a Casuarina, a representative for Brief the other day, who's done so much work in this area. And I said, and I'd asked her the old shark question. She said, yes, all sharks. But when I was talking to one of the fishing, you know, people, my contacts, they said, you know, we make different rules when it comes to groupers. We break it down. We say not this grouper, but that grouper. And because always the fear is, okay, so what if we change the law? We say that, okay, there you can take a few of these reef sharks. Let's try to hit that population. Let's get that down a bit. The worry would be like it would be not be controlled. It would not be controllable. And again, the threat to the natural environment would be increased. My other question is like, what is there something creating these problem sharks? Like, are the tour companies chumming up? Are the industries that are growing now in Bimini, Andros, Eleuthera, Grand Bahama, the Nassau, bringing money in? Shark tourism is a thing. It is bringing money into communities that need it desperately, whether or not it goes into the communities afterwards is a totally different conversation. But is there someone responsible for creating these problem sharks, or are these just sharks? Are we confused by the Disney princesses that we see on Shark Week that say, sharks are good? My kids went on Shark Week, and I sent them into the waters to go get filmed with sharks to be featured on it. And I did not worry about their safety in that setting. I know that, but I mean, is there someone creating these problem sharks? Is there a law that needs to be changed? What do you think is a solution to what you're saying is the problem?
Okay, let's talk.
I know that was like a CA question. I asked you 17 questions in one.
No. It needs to be asked, okay? Yeah. So let's address the first thing you asked. What is causing the problem? I think it's a multifaceted problem. I think that you have a situation where sharks are attracted to sources of food. So when you have dive operators that are constantly putting out huge blocks of chum.
And are there any regulations? I'm asking as a non-expert, are there any regulations for those dive companies at this time?
No, absolutely no regulations whatsoever. Okay, the only thing that's regulated is how they can get their license to do so. So there are dive operators that will buy things like tuna heads and barracuda skeletons from fishermen, and they will go and take them to their little dive spots where their tourists are paying them thousands of dollars per head to go on this little dive excursion. And they are actually bringing sharks to a particular reef or area intentionally, and sort of ignorant or turning a blind eye to the repercussions of the result or the impacts on the reef itself that they are there situated on, or the repercussions of the fishermen who may frequent the area, or to the random snorkelers that might want to visit that area that don't want to pay the tour operator. So what is dangerous about that particular aspect is that these sharks are learning to associate human beings with food. And in the absence of that regular supply of food, they are going to try and seek it from other human beings that are nearby or close enough proximity to where they are, and they're going to get agitated.
But is this assumption or is this scientific correlation? I was talking to someone about this before, and they said, you know, you go to a safari in Africa and you don't bait up with steaks to see lions. You go to one of the American national parks, you don't bait up to see a grizzly bear. But here in the Bahamas, we are baiting up in order to see the wild predator that is a shark come to us. And I know lots of people are disagreeing with Paul and saying that saying there's knowledge gaps in this conversation. So call in and tell us. But I mean, is this what you're saying science-based or I'm a fisherman-based?
No, there is science that speaks to that, the pressure that dive operators. In fact, it's outlawed in some places. So we are the ones that are continuing to live in the wild, wild west. You know, they're very, very strict on what makes sharks great and the science that should prove that sharks are beneficial. They're so great at the shark preservationists. They're so great at outlining why we need to protect the sharks. What is our responsibility to the global community? What is our responsibility to the marine ecosystem? But when it comes to this issue, where it is a clear and present danger to human beings' lives in these areas of which chumming is taking place, it's crickets. It is crickets, and it's not just science, because science has holes, Catherine.
But
science does not. If a scientist or a group of scientists does not decide to study something, there is no science on it.
But let me ask this, Catherine.
Yeah. Right?
But the observations of fishermen remain, and the observations of those who have been bitten remain.
Mm-hmm. So let's say this: we know that shark tourism is something here, right? Mm-hmm. You can go to Exuma now and the sharks come right on the beach and you feed them and you submerge yourself in the water and the sharks swim around you. This is a thing. This is what we promote. Mm-hmm. This is what we advertise. And you see it.
$103.8 million USD annually for sharks and rays generate. And most of that is shark tourism. Most of that money is shark tourism. So it does bring money.
So like Catherine says, $100 million we make a year just of shark tourism in general. Then we have the Shark Week, which the Bahamas is known for. People from around the world come here to feature sharks because this is the place to come. It's a controlled area, right? And now we have the human element, right? We have Bahamians on the beach, and there are a number of persons on the text line saying, but you sound like you mad at the shark for being, for being a shark. Shark is inside their own environment.
No.
But from what I'm understanding, you're suggesting that there are sharks that should be policed. Is it similar to the lionfish? Because the lionfish is inside their own environment, even though it's an invasive species. But we know that our government and our conservatories has put an issue, say, hey, we need the fish to regulate the lionfish. So are you suggesting that perhaps the sharks need to be regulated?
Absolutely. And that's all people like myself are saying, that there has to be balance. And what the argument that I always give to people that challenge me is that we have a season on groupers, we have a season on lobsters, we have a size limit on groupers, we have a size limit on conch, we have a size limit on lobsters. You can't fish this, you can't fish in this area, you have MPAs here, you can't do this, you can't do that, you can't use a fish pod without an escape hatch. All these different regulations related to these gigantic commercial fisheries in this country. But when it comes to sharks, no. No, no, there's no such thing as management science. There's
so what's So what's the difference between you saying, okay, I'm chumming up for a tour company, which are a lot of the responsibility. What after like a fatal attack, someone says, so whose fault is this? What has to be done?
I want to pause you there and then put this question to you, Catherine. The chumming up of waters is in the ocean. It's not necessarily near any beach.
But it is taking place near inhabited areas. It's taking place in major commercial fishing areas. It's taking place in major recreational fishing areas. And it's very dangerous. Let me give you an example. Okay, I am a resident of Adelaide. And my stomping ground is the southwest edge of New Providence. Mm-hmm. Okay? And there is a famous reef where Stuart Cobes operates and has done so for decades and has become very famous and has become very wealthy off of the sharks there, okay? And that area once upon a time was a very rich reef, and the sharks, I always remember growing up, the sharks were reasonable, mm-hmm. okay? Now, I've fished all over this country, save for deep south and maybe extreme north, and it is the most dangerous place I have ever dove in my life. Mm. Okay, and when I need to be able to get some of these points out because y'all are asking a lot of questions and not having a chance to answer them into their fullest.
You could do it, Paul. Go.
Yes. As my experience as a commercial diver, the further I go away from human populations, the more docile the sharks are, the more natural the sharks are, and the fewer the sharks I see in an area, the more fish I am seeing.
So you would say that shark behaviors are being changed by the operations of these tour companies.
Yes.
But isn't that just good ecotourism? Don't you, to know them is to love them, is when they say to people meeting nature. Don't we need people to come and interact with sharks
yes.
in order
so
to appreciate
them?
Yes,
so we need regulations. So what many like myself and in the NFA have proposed. Okay, maybe not ban the outright chumming of sharks, but you must do so at a specified distance away from any human settlement. You must do so in the most responsible manner, where maybe you bring them in with scent, but you don't actually feed them. Okay? And so that will help to bring in the big tiger sharks and the big hammerheads that everybody loves to see. But they're not going to then associate the chumming with actual food going into their stomach. Okay, so there are ways we can regulate it without being extremists ourselves.
But most
and
people
say
will
that
say,
this is
Paul,
forbidden.
7 deaths annually globally a year by shark fatalities. Are we really, is that really a big, I mean, any human life is a big deal.
Let me say that.
But is that really something that's worth destroying an industry over? Is that something that's fair to shut this down because of it?
First of all shark attacks in this country are not reported. Okay. There's numerous shark attacks against fishermen that have never been reported upon. In fact, one of the founding members of the NFA's son was viciously attacked. His entire, but you ever know that picture of Rodney Fox, the guy who was attacked by the big great white shark? Well, his body looked like that. Okay, bite on his face, bite on his arms, and you never heard a word about it in the newspaper. okay? And there are people, especially the dive operators, that make their customers sign non-disclosure agreements, which means whatever happens in this dive operation, you are not allowed to go to the public and talk about. So if they get bit by a perhaps overzealous reef shark, they're not allowed to go to the press and say, Stuart Cobes, or sorry to call you out, Stuart Cobes.
You need to be apologetic.
Yeah. Don't mean to single you out. You're just the most famous one.
They are famous, and they were the first, and they're the biggest.
And they're proud of what they do.
Yes.
Okay? And they, you know, that person cannot then go and say, well, this company was negligent, and that's why I got bit. And, you know, so there's a lot of incidences that do take place that nobody is allowed to know about.
Yeah, and I was talking, like, I was going to get my conch out and talking to one of the guys making it, and he said, you know, when it comes to making this conch out, you know how many rules I have to abide by, you know how many people come by and check, you know how many, what you're told you have to train, the certificates you have to get, but when it comes to taking those tour boats out, it's basically like, here's your phone, and if anything goes wrong, shout out to Bajra, which is volunteer run. They're responsible for, they can't do much first aid legally because you make yourself liable. They transport people back and forth. The Defense Force is undermanned. They can't be responsible for all of these actions. So people say, well, where does the responsibility lie? And the answers I'm getting is there must be further, more regulations of the tour companies that are creating these unnatural conditions for people to interact with nature in. Is that valid?
Responsibility of the Department of Marine Resources to regulate this industry. It involves the marine resources. Sharks are obviously a multi-million dollar marine resource, and therefore they need to be regulated. And the people that are operating in it need to get used to the fact that they make demands of commercial fishermen that we must be responsible for the environment. We must be in control of how much we catch. We must be willing to sacrifice where we go through MPAs. We must be willing to sacrifice how many fish we catch, what size of fish we catch. But those individuals who want to then sit there and virtue signal, they don't want to take responsibility for what they have done in the industry and to the shark population and the public perception that people now have about sharks, that they are this invincible class of fish that can do whatever they want with impunity, and they're being protected even when they have exhibited very bad characteristics that need to be curbed. They are like anything else. They are a wild predator. And yes, we should love them and respect them. But at the same time, we are responsible for what we encourage them to do. And sometimes a natural predator cannot unlearn what it has learned. And sometimes you have to actually cull them. You have to take out select sharks from the environment. And that is what is done in almost every big game management, terrestrial, that's land-based, management scheme on the planet. When there's too many elephants in the big national parks in Botswana or Kenya, they either kill the young bulls, the big bull elephants, or tranquilize them and remove them from one park to the other. Or when there's too many wolves in Yellowstone eating too many of the elk to the point where the elk population is starting to crash, they will actually allow people to go and take out some of those wolves because that's responsible management. You cannot allow commercial fishermen and recreational fishermen because, as we know from Catherine Sullivan Seeley's science that she did on this matter, the recreational fishery of this country is a lot bigger than people realize. And so when you have the pressure of the commercial fishing industry and the recreational fishing industry upon the fishery stocks, the prey of the sharks, without what it's basically done with impunity, save for some seasons and some size limits. And then all of a sudden you're allowing the sharks to multiply and multiply and multiply. Too many predators are competing for the same resources, and it's going to cause a catastrophe. I brought here some science with me. Actually, from
I want to read that science, but I have a caller, and the caller been waiting for
a while. Okay.
But when the caller finish, we go straight to the science, right?
Yes.
We're straight to you, right?
Of course.
So,
of course.
Producer, put the caller through. Let me see what question they asking. Go ahead, caller. Neary. Yeah, I can hear you. Go ahead.
Oh, good day, Mr. Neary.
Good day.
Good day to your guest.
Good morning.
And good morning to the gentleman. I want to ask the gentleman something. I heard, you're saying that you dive around sharks, like
yes,
basically
very,
you
very
do that
regular.
For a hobby, or is that something that you do?
No, I'm a commercial fisherman,
okay.
So I live with sharks around me all the time.
You have fished basically you have dived throughout the Bahamas, you can say.
Yes, sir.
Basically, okay. Have you ever had an experience of diving in Grand Bahama?
No.
Okay. Well, that means, because I heard you said something about diving around sharks. Well, mm-hmm. It's been reported from ESPN, and you can don't have to take my word. You can look at it. It's a place in Grand Bahama called Pier 1. Mm-hmm. Right? I don't think I don't know if you ever heard, or anyone of y'all in the studio ever heard about Pier 1.
Pier 1.
Is that
no.
the place where you have all
store?
Of the
sharks? No. Okay, yes, ma'am.
The sharks gather, right?
Well, I can remember one time ago they had someone from ESPN came over mm-hmm. there to do a dive exhibition, and they couldn't even go down further down because there were so many sharks. That's why I was trying to figure out, like, if you ever been in Pier 1 and you sitting on that radio, talking today, you are blessed human beings.
So do you say this as a fisherman, as someone who's interested, or someone who is, I mean, how do you feel about swimming in our waters? How do sharks make you feel?
Personally, I don't do the beach like that. If I do the beach, it will be like close to the beach, because, you know, people are talking about sharks and stuff, right? That's you know, that's the water. Them, you know, we go out there and border them sharks, you know.
That's their house and we go
that's
to it?
That's their house and we go in and to try to take their house over. What do you think they can do? They got to defend their house and defend their children.
Yeah. But a lot of us came, and I'll say a lot of us came to age.
Thank you very much, Colin. I appreciate it.
In the Jaws era, where done. I mean, even when I see that in a swimming pool, I scare myself. And I'm a person who I feel like I'm educated as far as the natural environment goes. But there's a lot of fear. And I know a lot of grown Bahamians that are genuinely afraid of our waters. They're afraid to recreationally use our waters. Mm-hmm. And that, you know, as much as fatal attacks or other attacks on or off the record may be, there is a big fear of just enjoying that which is most beautiful about the Bahamas. Is mm-hmm. that something we should be feeling at this time?
I think that there's always a degree of balance in that perspective, okay? Mm. I think that if you want to enjoy the waters in the Bahamas, you have to accept
so
that there will be sharks no matter what you do.
So you acknowledge sharks is here.
Of course, and they have a right to be here, of course. But we also have a responsibility to our population mm-hmm. to protect them in the best way possible without going to extreme measures. You know, I know that there are some commercial fishermen that say we need to open up the sharks to be allowed to be eaten as a food source here yes. in the country. Mm-hmm. I've heard that argument. I've heard some fishermen say that, you know, it'd be nice if I could be able to kill a little reef shark or a little nurse shark and take it home and fry it up. I've heard some fishermen say that, you know, we should never allow commercial shark fishing. We just want to be able to kill problem sharks that have now made our personal conservation efforts very difficult. And one of the biggest examples I give is the commercial fish potters. The law on grouper fishing is that the grouper must be 3 pounds, no less than 3 pounds. So when you pull up a pot, often you will have 1, 2, 3 little baby groupers in there. You have to throw them back by law, okay? Or else you will be accused of being a poacher. Mm-hmm. And so when you throw those little fish back, when you throw the little butterfly fish, the angel fish, the parrot fish, the small grunts that you don't want to actually keep, you try to release them back into the water as a good ethical fisherman. And then there's a school of sharks underneath the boat that is just about to devour every single one. So you just feel like, well, what the hell was the point of me doing that? I just executed a bunch of little fish that, you know, I couldn't really legally do anything about. But what if fishermen who start to notice that some of these little reef sharks, because that's really what they are, they're Caribbean reef sharks. They are the principal problem in the commercial fishing industry. What if we were allowed to take some of those out of the ecosystem? Now, why I wanted to bring up the science.
Yes, I wanted you to bring up the science. That's right. Go ahead.
Why I wanted to bring up the science and why I brought up the tear of sharks earlier is because some sharks at the top of the apex predator pyramid eat other sharks, okay? The tiger shark is a very large part of his diet, mm-hmm. is smaller shark species, stingrays, turtles. Mm-hmm. And so all of these organisms throughout human history and the evolution of the ocean have been used to being eaten by these large hammerheads, bull sharks, tiger sharks, okay? And their populations were always controlled by these large sharks. Now, one of the failures of our shark ban is that most of these sharks are highly migratory species. So they migrate out of our country and they get killed when they leave our country. Whereas the little black tip reef sharks, the nurse sharks, which eat lobsters and conchs, and the bull sharks, they're more migratory than the others. But the Caribbean reef shark and the black tip reef shark, they have a lot of fidelity, so loyalty to a place in which they live. Now, there's some movement over time, but for the most part, they stay very loyal to an area. And whereas a tiger shark travels thousands of miles in a year, and they go from the deepest oceans, 4,000 feet down, all the way to the shallowest banks. And so these sharks are being killed outside of our waters. We cannot control that. But why did I bring up these predatory sharks? I think that, and this is my personal opinion, and this is for the most part not opinion I know is shared by a lot of people, but this is my personal opinion now. I'm taking off my NFA cap. My personal belief is that we need to protect the large predatory apex sharks, like the tiger shark, like the hammerhead, and allow for the taking of these smaller, lower top predator sharks, which are preying directly on the reefs themselves, which are becoming learned in their behavior, and are learning to associate fishermen and tourists and all this stuff with food and so on and so forth. So if we protect the large predatory sharks, most notably the tiger shark, then we will allow them to do nature's work, which is eating a reef shark a night. That's with one science operation that was operating off of in the Bahamas here. They determined that a reef shark returned to the Pumpkins Reef every night to eat a reef shark. Well, and that's a big deal. I could never kill, even if I tried, a shark every night. You know, I mean, so we need to protect those predators. But at the same time, we need to acknowledge that not all predators are equal. Not all of these sharks have the same growth rates. Not all of these sharks have the same birth rates. And not all of these sharks are vulnerable outside of our country as well as within. And well, so that's and what I call for.
One of the fishermen had written in a text when I was asking about this in research, and he said a fine example of this is Hawaii. When they had a string of attacks on surfers, they put out by tiger sharks. They said, go ahead, fishermen, kill these tiger sharks. And what result? This attacks on humans stopped, but they had an explosion of the white-tipped reef shark, which then it was a brutal attack on the reefs and the fish there. Now, we aren't the Bahamas. It's not Hawaii, but that is a case of taking out a super predator. So you're just saying that all predators are not created equal and you'd like them to be treated as such. And as far as, I mean, I think that the shark tourism is essential as far as any interaction, any ecotourism growth in our country is. I would like to believe that the growth of ecotourism is on the rise, that it's not just the $3 for $10 t-shirt tourists that we're attracting, but we are, and I know a lot of the environmental groups would say, we want them to come and have more natural interactions with our environments. We want them to take 3 days to see a predator, not 1 hour.
I would like to just add to that point. Nobody complains when they go on a safari that they didn't get to see all the top five big cats, okay? Because they know that those cats are in their natural environment and that there's a chance they're not going to see them. The tourists and the dive operators in this country are so spoiled. They think that it is a must that every shark that is in their proximity must be present for these tourists to see. And there's no humility or risk associated with this, because they are baiting the sharks there. They are not telling their clients, hey, there's a chance we're not going to get an opportunity to see the sharks.
So let me
there's a chance that these sharks in their natural environment may not show up. And so all that money you spent to come here may be for at least a couple days out of your trip wasted, but you still had the opportunity. And that's what it's like in nature. When you have these safaris and stuff, people spend a lot of money to go charter fishing. they're not guaranteed to catch a wahoo or a dolphin or a big tuna or a marlin, but they pay the money to go regardless. So why is it that we've just accepted that these dive operators and these tourists have a guaranteed right to see sharks?
So, but let me add this to the conversation, right? Because I hear what you're saying. This seems to be a debate between the charter fishermen who people are being paid to go and have the experience, tour operators who go and experience the sharks swimming next to them, commercial fishermen, Bahamian commercial fishermen, who find that because of these two operations, their lives are now more threatened than before. But we see that
lives and livelihoods.
Livelihoods,
I would say even a more greater threat than the actual lives.
Absolutely more.
But I wanted to say that I see a number of persons saying that this is a shark's environment. So the fishermen should be at bay because this is the environment for the sharks. But what I'm saying that part of the tour operation for seeing sharks is the water must be chummied. That is a fact. You can't move beyond that. And I think that you're lobbying for responsibility. For these operators, not necessarily, it's not saying that we need to get rid of all the sharks, but because this industry demands that chumming of the water must happen in order for the sharks to come in one place, that there needs to be either some regulation or there needs to be some checks and balances with the shark. But I'm seeing through the text that no one is, they hear you, but they say, but this is not our water, this is their water. But not realizing that the danger of the chumming and the danger of the operation is that these sharks will eventually and may perhaps come to the beaches, and that it's now put your life at threat because they're not entertaining the idea that either the sharks must be regulated or the industry must be regulated in terms of where do they chummy the water, where do they have these shark dives, et cetera, et cetera.
I hear that argument when people say that this isn't our water, this isn't... Listen here, we live in reality here, okay? This country is governed by the Constitution of the Commonwealth of the Bahamas, which says that these islands and these waters are for the benefit of the Bahamian people for the rest of time until we decide we don't want this Constitution anymore. And that means that the government of the Bahamas has a responsibility to the people of this country, and all of these sustainability goals that we've signed up to, none of them, they all like to point to the environmental sustainability goals, but none of them want to point to the ones that talk about ensuring that we alleviate poverty, that want to ensure that people have a livelihood that is worth living. And fishing has been in the world for over 40,000 years. And most of these people that are so anti-shark killing, their parents, they wouldn't be here if it wasn't for fishermen when it was a hard a times.
Okay, I have a call here. Producer Pastor caller through. Go ahead, caller. Can you hear me? Go ahead, caller. Can you hear me? Can't hear anything? Can't hear the caller? Try it again. Caller, can you hear me? No? I said you move on. Go ahead, Kathy.
So one of the things I'll say is I actually have a different take on it. When you say that these aren't our waters, well, then fishermen are interacting. Well, this is from a fisherman's point of view, but fishermen are interacting with the waters in a natural way. They're acting like they're the top of the food chain. They're going there to hunt and take from the waters. That could be a natural relationship. What is unnatural would be training, and this is a quote from one of the texts, training these animals like they're circus creatures. That's where the unnatural. So if you say these are our waters, then interact in a natural way. Humans, taking the human factor out of it, the fact that the human beings do sustain and live life based on a healthy relationship with these waters, which is give and take, that is not an unnatural relationship.
Yeah, and I want to be fair to the dive operators. Commercial fishing does contribute to sharks getting agitated and baited up. So, example, if there's a lot of fish spotting in an area, and you go through diving afterwards, you'll notice that the sharks have been attracted there because they are eating the bycatch. They are used to being attracted to the fishermen's fish on their spear. So it's not all their fault, but just like we all, the only difference is fishermen have to regulate themselves because their lives are at risk out there all the time. So we self-regulate with that regard to make sure that we have a respectful relationship with the sharks. But a lot of people just, they go in there so arrogant and so bold with their chainmail on, and they say, I don't care if the shark bites me. I'm you know, whatever.
Someone wants to talk to you, Paul.
Okay, here, right?
Go ahead, caller. Can you hear me today? Caller, can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you. Can you hear me?
Yes, go ahead.
All right. Good morning to your guests. I'm Duncan.
Good morning.
No, this is Catherine.
Catherine Chisnall.
She's my guest host today.
Yeah, okay, Ms. Chisholm. All right. I'm not trying to make a joke or nothing. The most you might add it up to is they just dumb questions, right? Since you're talking about the shark, right?
Mm-hmm.
First question, and give them a chance to hang up the phone. They listen, cut the TV back on to hear you, right? First question, can we start eating them sharks, them? I mean, I think people have eaten them, but do we need to eat them more? The second one, I can't see, right? I'm visually impaired, but someone was playing a video on the side of me, describing and telling me, say, right here in the Bahamas, I don't know if it's in Nassau or what, how close the sharks were swimming. And I have family members, and different from my family members, people go there and swim, and I was wondering what's going on, or they're now changing, if the shark's hungrier now, or if there's something we doing to make them come so close, or what do we need to do to enjoy the beach and to stay out their way. Then the last thing, do you all agree with the government giving these companies license for these visitors to come over here? They say it's $1 billion or $100 million industry to make money. But do you all agree with them, giving them companies over here license to invite the visitors to come over here to feed the sharks and stuff like that? Because some of them losing their lives, allegedly. I'll hang up and listen. Thanks.
Go ahead, Paul.
Let's give him a chance to put on his TV.
So I just,
thank you, but I'm going to give it to you to answer, Paul. I think you should answer this, and I know you have shark fin soup delicacy experience. But also, can you answer it with the holding hands with lionfish, the fact that we do eat lionfish? Your mother's restaurant was the first one to ever serve it. And so is that one of the answers? Can we put the shark on the menu?
And before we answer that, we have to do our commercial break. We got that one.
Okay.
We go straight back. This is Guided Radio AM with C.A. Nuri and guest host Catherine. We'll be right back after this brief commercial.
Okay, class, let's begin today's history lesson. Ancient civilization used to visit stadiums to watch musicians perform. It was called a live concert.
Teacher, what year was that?
Researchers believe it was around 2019. Normal life feels like a long time ago. As things return to normal, remember, it is essential to be fully immunized against all vaccine-preventable diseases like COVID-19, rubella, polio, hepatitis, mumps, and influenza. This message is brought to you by PAHO WHO, the Ministry of Health and Wellness, the Caribbean Development Bank, the Government of Canada, and the United States of America.
Love the show? Want to give your support? Become a sponsor today. Call 302-2300 for our rates and packages. That's 302-2300. Become a sponsor on Guardian Radio 96.9 FM. Fresh news, smart talk, all day.
This is Guardian Radio 96.9 FM. Fresh news, smart talk, all day.
And welcome back to Guardian Radio in the AM with C.A. Nuri. And we're talking about sharks. Are there too many sharks? Should we have sharks on the menu? I mean, when I was younger, I had shark and rice. I haven't tasted that in at least 20 years. And I kind of vex because I used to like that. You know, I used to have turtle soup too, but I don't have, I'm losing the taste, losing the memory.
Don't confess eating flamingo, please, C.A.
We call it hush hush. But I wouldn't confess of eating shh at all. So, but I've even eaten donkey, but that's a different question all together. So what kind of thing you'd be eating? But go ahead, Paul. The question was, should we bring it back? Is there a need to, I mean, I know we have a caller too, so I'm going to go to the caller right after you answer that.
Yeah, thanks. I think it's a natural thing. You don't want to waste. And if you, let's say, for example, we do, fishermen that have lobbied for this do succeed in having some sort of shark fishery or an allotment to kill sharks. Then it would only be natural to say to fishermen, well, you don't have to throw the dang thing away. You can take it home and eat it. Or you can bring it home to your family and they can eat it, or your uncles and your cousins. The real difficulty with the whole eating of the sharks comes from the commercialization of it. And I think that was what the main argument against shark fishing period was, is we do not want to commercialize it. I'm not saying that I strictly agree with that, but I understand that full well, because once you open the door, for example,
to meat and teeth, et cetera, sales, it's
so
dangerous.
So what one fisherman proposed to me was that you ban finning, teething, and all these other luxury items that have come off a shark, to really emphasize that it's the whole shark that is valuable, but we're not going to allow you to kill sharks for the specific wasteful reason that we know is being put on pressure upon us from the eastern markets and from Florida, because they still do shark finning in Florida, you know. And so we don't want to allow
They have banned shark dive tourism and chubbing of waters in
Florida. Oh, wow, but they allow finning.
Yeah, there's a caller waiting on you.
Okay, producer, you patched that caller through? Go ahead, caller. Thank you very much. We have 2 minutes to wrap this up. Go ahead.
Yeah, good morning, Eric.
You were there? Hello? Go ahead. I can hear you loud and clear.
Yeah, good morning, and good morning to you again.
Good morning.
Morning.
Yeah, I agree with the gentleman, because we have a major problem in the southern part of Cat Island with the white-tip shark. We have, a group of tourists that comes down, they're, it's 3 times over the year, and they feed the shark. So now what happened, now the divers, them is being threatened on there now. Yeah, and for some reason, we was trying to get them to, they try to ease up of feeding shark, but they're saying that it's an industry that they have going on down there now, where they bring in revenue.
Absolutely.
And it's becoming a major problem for the divers down there, because sometimes some of the divers, when the white tip shark comes around, they have to try to get in that boat as quick as possible.
Yeah, because they're very aggressive sharks.
Very, and it's a major problem. And long before, I hope nothing don't happen, but they're just increasing by the numbers down there.
I thank you very much, caller. This has been Guardian Radio in the AM. I ran out of time. Catherine, yes. I enjoyed you. I can't wait for the next episode with you here.
Thank you, fishermen, for surviving pandemics, Dorian, and the struggle. And we look forward to this conversation continuing, along with how healthy ecotourism can look.
And thank you all for having this balanced conversation, and to allow a different perspective to be heard.
Thank you very much. Tomorrow.